Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Edition here of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is your host, Brian Diaz. Very happy to be here with you on a Thursday, the unofficial start to the weekend here in New Orleans. Actually, every day is kind of like the weekend here in New Orleans. But hey, we're going to get you all set up here for what's coming up in the coming days and actually here in the holiday season. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. If you're listening in here on the podcast and you're in or on the radio and you were in the States and had a great Thanksgiving, if you're listening to the podcast outside the country, I hope you had a good Thursday last week. We ran here on the radio. If you were listening in, we actually ran a repeat from a show earlier in the month. If you're a podcast listener, which I greatly appreciate, we pulled together some different interviews from different shows over the past 3 months or so, and kind of the whole idea was things that were a bit more thought-provoking, perhaps some social issues connected to the world of drink and food in and around New Orleans and beyond. That was a lot of fun. Those are all available if you're actually interested in the podcast. You can find that on, it's under NOLA Drinks. You can find that on iTunes, Google Play Music, and also TuneIn Radio, or you can check out our website, NOLADrinks.com. Have a good show here for you today. Very excited. First, in a little while here, we're going to be talking to Star Hodgson, who is in New Orleans, actually technically in Florida right now, but she lives and bartends here in New Orleans. And she is over in Florida, in Tampa, I believe, where the Southern region of the U.S. Bartenders Guild is taking place, their regional meeting, which they do once a year. And our New Orleans chapter, as you might imagine or expect, is greatly represented. We think we have about 10, 11, 12 people from different establishments here who are part of the NOLA chapter of the USBG, as we say, the United States Bartenders Guild. And we were actually going to talk with, I think Star was the previous president, but we were going to talk with the current president, Mark Shetler. Unfortunately, Mark is not feeling well, and I know he was going to give a seminar today on risk management and some other things, but he texted me this morning and he's come down with strep throat. Talk about risk. I guess you travel out to Florida for a Bartenders Guild conference and you get sick. So we wish Mark the best. Hope he is on the mend and feeling better quick. So Star is going to fill in for him. We're going to get a little bit of an understanding about what this whole regional meeting is about and what they're doing out there. That should be fun. Then in the second hour, we're going to even have more fun. Michael Knisley, who is a champagne expert here in New Orleans. He runs an outfit called Bublio Tech. We're going to talk to Michael about all things champagne, which seems to be kind of ideal here coming into the holidays. So that should be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about champagne. We're going to talk about how it's made. We'll probably touch on some of the other styles of sparkling wine out there. Sometimes it can be a little bit confusing, even a little mysterious to people about what sparkling wine is all about. So we'll clear that up, hopefully, with Michael. We're going to taste some stuff and talk about some of the things that he's up to around town, sharing the world of bubbly, about which he is so passionate. So that'll be fun in the second hour. Michael Knisley of Bublio Tech. If you are looking for some stuff to do this evening, folks, let me recommend a wine tasting, as I often do. Our good friend Leora Madden over there at Pearl Wine Company in Mid-City, 3700 Orleans Avenue in the American Can Building, as I always say, is hosting their typical free Thursday tasting from 5 to 7. And she's got a great winery lined up. This is Longmeadow Ranch coming in. They're in Napa, I believe, Howl Mountain area, and which is a kind of a pretty exclusive area there in Napa and up on the hillside above the valley. And Longmeadow Ranch has been around for a number of years, and they do some really great stuff. It looks like the tasting is going to feature Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, their Cabernet Sauvignon, which is fantastic. And they're also known for doing pretty fantastic olive oil, apparently. And so there's going to be a little bit of an olive oil tasting, I guess, going on too. And if you go, the free tasting is free, just like it says, like the name. There's truth in advertising in this case. And you can get 10% off all of the wines and the olive oil at the tasting. 5 to 7 Pearl Wine Company. That should be a lot of fun, friends. Check that out. Also this evening, on sort of the music and cultural front, the Historic New Orleans Collection is having a really interesting event that goes from 6 to 8:30, which is also free. The Historic New Orleans Collection, folks, if you're in New Orleans and you've never been there, you should. If you're listening from out of town and you come visit New Orleans, go check out the Historic New Orleans Collection. It is a very cool museum. They have a really massive collection, and they tend to rotate in different displays and materials on a regular basis. So it's sort of an ever-changing thing in their space. They're on the 500 block of Royal Street, 533 to be specific. And they host some really interesting events. And tonight is really going to be a neat one. It's the launch of their third volume of the Louisiana Museum's biography series. And what they're doing is they're re-releasing a new edition, or they've produced a new edition, I should say, of the wonderful book, A Life in Jazz, by the great Danny Barker. And Danny Barker, if you don't know, was one of the most important musicians really in New Orleans history of music. And of course, we know how rich the history of music here is in this town. Danny Barker was a storyteller, researcher, songwriter, a performer, a mentor, actually, to so many of the great musicians here in New Orleans. He passed away a number of years ago, I think a couple decades ago. But one, you know, certainly one of my favorite artists, and his influence and his reach is something to not be underestimated. So there's going to be some lectures, some interviews. There's going to be some performances. The wonderful drummer Shannon Powell is going to play. Banjoist Seva Vinay is going to be there performing. So I guess they're going to do a few interviews here and there. And then interspersed with the interviews, there's going to be performances. And then there's also going to be straight up performances from 7:30 to 8:30. I guess the interviews run from 6:30 to 7:30. It's free to get in. The whole thing starts at 6 o'clock. Again, Historic New Orleans Collection, 533 Royal Street. On Saturday, if you're looking to check something out that's a lot of fun, you can head over to the other side of the lake to Pontchartrain Vineyards up in Bush, which is an hour from downtown New Orleans here where we are at WGSO. And it is about an even hour. It's not one of those ones where they tell you it's an hour and it's an hour and 10 minutes. It's an hour. It's about like 55 minutes to an hour when you get over there. Nice drive. Should be hopefully an okay day. Maybe a little bit of rain. We'll see what happens. But it'll be inside, folks. They are doing their quarterly wine club release party there at the winery from noon to 3. And what goes on there is actually you don't have to be in the wine club to go. If you are in the wine club, you get to enjoy an exclusive food pairing that the wines that come out in the quarterly release that you get as a wine club member for a discounted price and all that get to go into the cellar. And there's a food pairing that's going to go on crafted by a local New Orleans chef, Kelly Cook. And she's putting together a great menu that'll go with the three wines released in the package. And that'll be a lot of fun. You do have to be a wine club member to do that. The wine club is free to join. You could actually show up there and sign up for the wine club and jump into the pairing right away. That goes from 12 to 2:30. There's going to be live music by the Red Wine Jazz Band going on from 12:30 to 3. Again, this is also free for everyone to attend. You don't have to be a wine club member to go, so you can enjoy the music in the tasting room. You can enjoy a flight of wines, which I believe is $5 a person. And that is refundable. Each bottle you buy for each person, you don't have to pay the $5 or you get your $5 back. So there's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be big sales on wines going on where you can stock up there for the holidays. And then also they will celebrate a release of a brand new wine called Rosso Criollo or Creole Red. And it is principally an Italian red blend. Very nice, light in body and style, kind of reminds you perhaps of a Chianti. It has three Italian varietals in it, or with, I should say, provenance from Italy, Zinfandel, Primitivo, and Sangiovese. And then I believe there's a little bit of Merlot and Syrah going on in there as well. But again, a lighter bodied wine, wonderful. They're kind of harkening back to those classic Creole Italian restaurants. Think Pascal's, Manali, Mosca's, that sort of thing. Red checkered tablecloth, that deal. And that wine will be released that day. And it's also part of the club package. So that ought to be a lot of fun. Check that out. You can get more information at PontchartrainVineyards.com. That event, again, from 12 to 3 over there Saturday across the lake at the winery. Go enjoy the tasting room. Hopefully the weather will cooperate. And like I said, even if it doesn't, it's inside. You'll be fine. Folks, we're going to take a break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back. We're going to do a little bit of wine and other news. And then we'll give Star Hodgson over there in Tampa a call. Come on back. My boy, sweet boy, real man, son of a gun, we have big fun on the bayou. Jambalaya, coffee pot, filet gumbo, cause tonight.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu. Life is meant to be lived, not endured.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy to be here with you. Happy Thursday, everybody. A little bit of Marvin Gaye there. I heard it through the grapevine. Always good stuff. Hey, Anthony. Anthony's here working the board as he always is. Do you think you could pull up some Danny Barker music since we were talking about that? We'll do that in one of these other breaks. Folks, if you are just tuning in, we were talking about the terrific event going on at the Historic New Orleans Collection, all about Danny Barker, the wonderful New Orleans musician. So we'll spin some good Danny Barker for you on some of the outros and intros. Seems kind of appropriate. Also kind of appropriate, I guess, or very appropriate. Michael Meisley is coming in here in the second hour from Bibliotech, and we are going to talk all about champagne and sparkling, ideal here for the holiday season. And a bit of news, folks, in the wine world about, well, let's start with a little bit of sparkling. There was the appropriate part. Notice how I just like make these natural segues. It's really incredible. As Americans continue to become more comfortable enjoying sparkling wine, on its own, and not just during cocktail hours, as this little lead-in says here. The most important thing is that champagne sales and sparkling wine sales in general continue to grow. And just so we're clear, and we'll get into this with Michael, not all sparkling wine is champagne. I think we probably, everybody out there listening knows this, but just if there's a few of you that don't, or if you don't, these days to be called champagne, it actually has to come from the region of Champagne in France. And that is also made to a certain set of specifications, processes, as well as certain varietals that you are permitted to use. Champagne is a member of the larger, if you will, even though that's where it originated, sparkling, more or less originated. There's some question about that. Sparkling wine family, which would then also include things like cava from Spain, Prosecco from Italy, any number of iterations of sparkling wines from the New World. And more often than not, the process, most of the time people tend to, I think with the nicer stuff anyway, use the traditional champagne method or méthode champenoise, which now is kind of frowned upon using. So you'll see on these bottles, traditional method or méthode traditionnelle. And that means that it's made basically the same way that champagne is made. We'll get into that with Michael, but I want to clarify that. So in this article here, we're talking a little bit more about the broader world of sparkling, which then of course does, as I explained, include champagne. Consumption in the United States, or sales, in 2015 reached 21.7 million liter cases, which was up from 19.7 million in 14 and 18.4 million in 2013, and even up from there, 17.6 million in 2012. So quite clearly, those of us here in the United States are consuming an increasing amount of bubbly. And one of the things that the article says here, which is from Decanter, I believe, that I find interesting, to say, as is the case with so many categories of wine, once consumers begin to better understand the classic examples of a particular style, and in this case, we are talking about champagne, sort of the touchstone or benchmark category, that they typically follow a path where they explore and purchase other examples of that wine from different parts of the world. Now, in the case of sparkling, they don't really cite any evidence of this, and I'm not disputing it entirely. However, I do think that there might be, you know, some considerations where that is not the case. Champagne is typically a bit more, I think, expensive in most cases, certainly compared to Cava and certainly compared to Prosecco. And those two, especially lately, Prosecco has been growing very considerably here in the U.S. market. So I think a lot of people's intro to sparkling wine may not necessarily be an understanding of champagne. The gateway may have been something like Prosecco or Cava. I think that bears a little bit of a, just some questioning. I'd like to, hear a little bit more of the data here that says that champagne is the gateway. But fair enough, you know, when you generally look at that sort of touchstone or main category within a larger category, subcategory, I should say there, as part of a larger category, people then kind of find their way into other stuff. So those sales are up. A lot of the domestic stuff is really riding this pretty hard. Gloria Ferrer, which is in Sonoma out there in California, their sales are up 5% in 2016, so far this year. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of very positive things happen in the sparkling industry in the United States. A lot of people are starting to jump into the game a little bit more. Some of these things are actually quite pricey. We're seeing a lot of California sparklings that are well in excess of $50, $70, $80, even $100, which, you know, puts it really on par with a lot of the higher end champagnes coming from France. And, you know, the latitudes are somewhat similar. I think what you're finding too with a lot of the sparkling wines grown in California anyway, in particular, is that people have figured out that, like champagne, and what makes, we'll talk more about this with Michael, I'm sure, what makes the region of Champagne work so well is that these wines will tend to, the grapes, the varieties that we're talking about, will tend to ripen a little bit early, but they'll still enjoy the level of acidity that they need to make good sparkling wine. And you need generally a cooler climate to achieve this. So a lot of people are growing grapes specifically for sparkling wine use on the coast of California, out in Carneros there in Napa and Sonoma, Santa Maria, which is down in Monterey County in Central California, or in the central coast, I should say, of California. So they're really kind of planting it in the right areas. You certainly see a lot of sparkling coming out of New Zealand, which is enjoying a great deal of popularity these days, similar, mostly out of Marlborough. Certainly a similar set of growing conditions there. And even in southern Australia and I believe Tasmania, which is certainly cooler than a lot of places in Australia, that Tasmania being south of the main continent and island there of Australia. So again, we're starting to see a broadening of the world of sparkling. And this is driven, largely by the growth of consumption really everywhere, but the United States certainly being a primary example of that. All right, so there's maybe some good news. Bubbly on the rise. We like that kind of stuff. Now, maybe a little bit of bad news. Well, this is sort of a weird way to say bad news, but we're going to talk a little bit about climate change here briefly and how that affects wine production. Climate change is really changing the landscape, folks, of a lot of things. And what it's causing is that we are starting to shift warmer temperatures to the north, and that is essentially principally threatening a lot of the regions where wine is being grown. A very good example of what we were just talking about here is the Champagne region, which is northeast of Paris. So pretty far, as we consider most wine growing regions in France, pretty far to the north. What is going on is that sparkling wine production is increasing in southern England because of the warming. And a lot of the warming is going up, you know, seemingly pretty consistently every year. I think we are all reading the climate record and know that that we've had 8 of the last warmest years in the UK in the last 10 years, if I'm not mistaken, something along those lines. So we're starting to see that more sparkling wine is being grown and produced for the reason we were talking about coastal California. You get that proper ripening for grapes that don't need to be so ripe to make sparkling wine going on. Now, this particular conference that went on in Germany was talking about the need to adapt to a lot of this. Temperature changes in Central Europe are predicted to go up 2 to 3 degrees Celsius by 2100. And this is really going to change a lot of things. Now, what we were just talking about, shifting growing regions to the north, threatening growing regions to the south. But what this also means is that there's a lot of unpredictability that's actually going to happen. So it doesn't necessarily mean you can draw these nice even lines and just say, hey, we're just going to move everything north because it's warmed up this number of degrees. What we're also going to be experiencing and have been experiencing, I think is pretty clear, is that there are a lot of, you know, variability in the weather. So for example, severe flooding, rain, changes in humidity, these things. So it's not just this even line that's going to occur where you just sort of do a gradient and shift everything north. So new technologies are probably going to have to be embraced. Consumers are going to have to change their mentality a little bit. I think people want wine to be traditional, consistent, and high quality, which is one of the quotes here in the article, and not too expensive. And as they're pointed out here at the conference in Stuttgart, some of these things are somewhat conflictual. A good example is that they're talking mostly about German wines, but because of the increase in heat, what we're seeing is slightly higher numbers in pH, meaning the acidity in the grapes. And of course, as we all remember from our high school science classes, the higher the level of pH, or the higher the number of pH, the lower the level of acid. So the lower the number of pH, the more acidity that we have in something. And that really changes the wine. So having to do things like acid adjustments, meaning adding acid, which was really poo-pooed in Germany and in many places as traditional winemaking, is stuff that may need to be on the table, folks. So something's got to kind of give. How we make it, how we consume it, and how we enjoy it, and what we're willing to buy, you know, we're either going to have to adapt to a different style of wine, or we're going to have to adapt to a different set of production circumstances that may be perhaps even more interventionist when we make wine. Folks, we're playing a little bit of Danny Barker here for you on the Nola Drink Show. Come on back. We're going to talk to Star Hodgson.
The pretty eight-ward hunters, the Wild West Shoshone hunters, and we don't bow down.
We don't bow down
on nobody's ground.
Nobody's ground.
Oh, how we love to hear you call us Indian Red. Here comes the spy boy, the flag boy. But watch that crazy wild man, the wildest in the lowlands, and you love our queen.
You love our queen.
Queen of New Orleans.
Queen of New Orleans.
Oh, how we love to hear you call us Indian Red.
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose, Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vieux Carré. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranac's, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Greetings, New Orleans. This is James Moises of Moises Wines, thanking you for 6 years of drinking my Pinot Noir from the Willamette Valley of Oregon. Seeing how my wine has become a big part of many of your memories and special occasions has surpassed my expectations. From me and the entire Moises Wine family, thank you for all your support. Let's toast with Moises Wines for the holidays and a happy and healthy new year. All the best. Cheers.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
I'm gonna do this tune. Ooh, that's right. At the head of the table, I'm gonna place Brother Henry's chair. I'm gonna invite all the local big dogs. We're gonna laugh, we're gonna talk, we're gonna eat. Then I'm gonna rake up the bones for Henry Jones. Because Henry doesn't eat no meat.
Yeah, folks, little Danny Barker saved the bones for Henry Jones. That's a classic. That is a classic Danny Barker tune. Folks, we are getting Star Hodgson on the phone from the U.S. Bartenders Guild New Orleans chapter. We're working on it. Had a little technical difficulty there during the break. But they are out there, folks. Oh, hey, there we go. Star, are you there on the line?
How's it going?
Hey, it's going okay. How are you?
Living the dream.
Hey, right on. You're out of the elevator.
I'm out of the elevator.
Right on. Hey, well, thanks for filling in for Mark here today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Yeah. How's he feeling? We were talking at the top of the show that he wasn't feeling too well.
No. He's going to go to urgent care and see if they can help him out.
Okay. Was he able to pull off his seminar before?
Well, luckily, most of what has gone on has been in planning for a long time, so we've got his back.
Oh, okay. Good. Good to hear. Good to hear. Well, thanks for filling in, Star. So we were talking a little bit... just very briefly at the top of the show about the U.S. Bartenders Guild, which I know you've been involved with for a number of years. You're the previous chapter president for New Orleans before Mark, right?
Correct. I'm the vice president before that and a founding member as well.
Okay, great. So you've been, so you're basically, what's left? What offices haven't you held that are still out there for you?
I'm currently the national membership board chairperson.
Oh, okay. So for the national level for USBG.
Correct.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Well, so now, can you give people just, I know we've talked about it on the show here and there with Mark and stuff like that times previous, but can you tell people just briefly, what is the U.S. Bartenders Guild, and then what is the NOLA chapter all about?
Well, the U.S. Bartenders Guild is a group of professional individuals who are dedicated to learning the craft and sharing knowledge and making sure that we all elevate ourselves and our bar programs all throughout the country. And, we're dedicated to education is the main component. We also do a lot of charity work as well as local outreach and helping our fellow bartenders. The NOLA chapter, I feel I am slightly biased, but I do travel quite a bit. And I have to say the NOLA chapter is amazing with our social outreach and working with bartenders and inviting them in and making sure that everyone feels welcomed and part of the community. That's something about New Orleans that's pretty special as our community.
Yeah, you guys do a lot, you know, and I want to touch on something or highlight something here, Star, that you just mentioned. A lot of the charity work, and especially I know with some of the recent flooding here in Louisiana and many other things, doing fundraising nights where you all donate tips for example, to charitable causes. That is a big part of what you all do.
Absolutely. We want to make sure that we are giving back as much as we receive. So being part of the community, sharing, and, you know, we reach out to all around the nation as well with charitable fundraisers as well. One of our main charities is Second Harvest Food Bank, which is amazing for sharing food, needed food items with families all around Louisiana. They're a great organization.
Yeah, that's a fantastic organization, no doubt about it. Well, and then you guys, so aside from that, then you guys meet on a regular basis here in New Orleans. And is it a kind of thing, so it's a professional development consideration, right? Like you said, education. Are we talking about technique? Are we talking about new products? Are we just sort of sharing knowledge all the way across the board with your peers?
It's multifold. We want to make sure that we have an educational component every month. So it could be techniques or making your bar more efficient or being the most eco-friendly bar program you could run, things like that, as well as new product information, old product information, the basis of studying categories of spirits in depth and further. Today, my seminar was on the history of agave and its lore and its mystery and its foundations and roots. So it goes beyond just products. It's more in depth about its heritage and the reasons why we are using what we're using.
That's very cool, Star. We'll have to have you on the show because the not to get too far off track here, but the topic of agave production, traditional ways of life, some of the threats to agave production. I've done a couple shows on that topic. It's a topic near and dear to me. So we'll have to get you in to talk on that and continue moving that story forward sometime when you're back in town.
Really? Absolutely.
Cool. So now in this situation, you guys have a delegation out there from our New Orleans chapter of the Guild, and you guys are at a regional meeting, the Southern Regional Meeting, correct, which is in Florida?
No, this is a Tampa Bay Repeal Day conference and gala.
Okay.
Year. Repeal Day was December 5th, mm-hmm. and so every year Tampa throws a conference and gala to really celebrate that. Right now, we've just started day one of the conference. We will have conferences all day tomorrow as well, seminars, for, you know, expanded knowledge and learning as well, like we're talking. There are dinners and pop-ups and really fun things to do at night and just lots of social time because bartenders are very social creatures in general. But often we don't get to really experience as much social time as we'd like working behind the bar. You have to be really on your A game all the time. So it's really nice to share and commiserate with others and make sure that you're sharing new ideas and listening to what other people are doing and taking that into consideration. So it's a really great meld. There's people here from Las Vegas, San Francisco, New York, Washington, all around Florida. Florida's a great supporter. We have 12 members from New Orleans here at this conference this year, which is our biggest group yet. Texas, Oklahoma, I mean, it's just people from all over the country are here supporting and having a great time.
That's cool. See, and I'm sorry that I was confused. I think if I'm not mistaken, the Southern Regional Meeting for the South Region of the U.S. Bartenders Guild, that's actually taking place in New Orleans sometime in next year. Is that right?
We are hosting. It will
that's
be
cool.
in May, and we're very excited about that. Typically, it's going to be in April this year. Typically, we move it around every year. It's kind of a new process. It started about 4 years ago, and originally it was initiated for the leaders of our guilds from around the country. But now it has turned into leaders as well as our members. And it's been really amazing. It's a great time to share. This is much like that, a little bit more expanded but small at the same time. And we will be hosting. Charleston was our host this last year, and that was fantastic. It's great to go and visit another town and see what people are doing and, you know, have the regional food and cuisine. It's amazing, really great time. Meet new people, have a great time. Learn some interesting information and in general, just enjoy life and what it's giving you.
Yeah, hey, nothing wrong with that. That sounds like that can't be bad. So start with what's going on out there with Repeal Day, as you noted, December 5th. With the conference and the seminars that are going on out there, is there a particular focus or is it kind of the same stuff that maybe would take place at a regional meeting or things maybe that people would experience at Tales of the Cocktail? Or is there something finer to this? Is it more business-oriented?
It is probably similar in a lot of ways. We have speakers from different parts of the country that are talking about something near and dear to their heart. The focus this year has definitely been to try and make sure that our conferences, our seminars, are expanding on, not a repeat of something that's already happened. So everyone's bringing something new to the table, which is really fun and refreshing. Tales of the Cocktail is basically one of these smaller conferences on steroids. you see everyone for 30 seconds at best, a big hug and a how you doing. And you run from one place to the next and try and do as many things as you possibly can fit in. You get about 2 to 4 hours of sleep if you're lucky, and try and be at every single thing that you can possibly, from 8 a.m. workouts in the morning until the last call at the Alibi at the end of the night. So Tales of the Cocktail is very own unique national event that we are very happy to host every year.
Yeah, and that's one of those ones I know in the past couple of years, adding the morning workouts. I think it's great in concept. I think it's got to be painful in practice.
Well, I have found actually that if you've had a little too much to drink, getting up and getting moving first thing in the morning really helps push it away.
More so, power to you, Star.
Big fan of yoga and walking in the morning.
Okay, good. I'm impressed that you can do that. I always like to joke with that event. You know, sort of like I start to feel like I've recovered from last year's event right about when next year's event's starting.
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. So then what with some of the events that are going on there, you mentioned pop-up dinners and things like that. Is that, are brands sponsoring some of these activities, or are these the establishments, or a combination of the two?
We have a lot of generous brands that are sponsoring our different dinners and events and pop-ups around the, well, this year, Tampa Bay Repeal Day is held in St. Pete's. So it's pretty interesting. Most of us have been coming out for a few years now, but we've never actually made it over to the Bay here.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing a lot of things in St. Petersburg, which is really a beautiful, beautiful town. And then there will be some activities, like specifically on Saturday, we'll be back into Ybor and Tampa for the gala and a few other things. So it's been really fun to just get here and start hanging out in a different part of the Bay.
Yeah, St. Pete's Beach is a really wonderful. I'm assuming that's why you guys are out on the have been out of the beach and some of the bars out there and stuff like that.
Not yet, but the weather's beautiful.
Get out there.
Most people arrived this morning. A few of us got in last night, and so we're just kicking it off right now. We're going to tonight. There's a most valuable bartender dinner as well as the welcome dinner. So there's a welcome dinner for all of our new conference attendees as well as repeat attendees. Our volunteers that have gone above and beyond over the past, over last year and then in years past, we started honoring them with a dinner on the first night of the conference. So tonight is the MVP dinner, which will be amazing. And it's really the people that have really worked their keisters off making sure that everything goes well. As you probably know, in a volunteer organization, sometimes people don't show up. They need a lot of direction. And so there's a lot of people here doing double and triple time, and that's really appreciated. So we make sure that they have a nice dinner before they get crazy.
That's cool. So who, do we know who's being honored here at the dinner this time around?
There is a list. I could pull it up.
if you have it handy, that's fine. Anybody that we know and love from down here, or is it somebody or people?
Well, of course. Mark is on that list. Zamperti wasn't able to come with us last year because he had just moved to San Diego. He has since moved back to New Orleans, so he's here this year. So he's an honorary from the past year. Jeffrey Knott. And in honorarium, his late wife, Melissa Knott, is also being honored this year. Also New Orleans people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We have a lot of new people this year. And who else can I tell you from New Orleans that is NVB? I'm sorry, I don't have the information.
That's all right, Starling. That's cool. That's a great representation, which is wonderful for the wonderful bartending community here in New Orleans. Well, hey, before we let you scoot, I haven't actually seen you in a long time. I think you and I met at the, if I remember right, the Louisiana Restaurant Association conference some years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago. Yeah, and it's been ages since I've seen you. Are you still working? What are you up to these days? Are you still working with Glazer like you were doing?
I left them last year in order to take a little bit more of a part-time approach to life.
That's good.
And so I'm now brand ambassador for Mezcal El Silencio Louisiana here.
Oh, yeah.
And working with a couple of little brands to help them get started and doing some private consulting, things like that. Yeah.
Great. That's cool. And are you pulling any, do you pop in and pull some bar shifts anywhere now and again or something like that, or pretty much doing the brand ambassador and consultation stuff?
Pretty much that. Yeah. I've been I teach people at home how to make cocktails and teach their friends, and they have little parties and they get to learn how to, because everybody wants to be their own bartender. It's pretty fun to get behind the bar and shake. So I go and set up a bar and teach them how to make a couple drinks, and it's a lot of fun. And then I do some, you know, private events, big parties and things like that. And special events, charity events. I'm a big donator of time to those sorts of organizations. And, yeah, but nothing behind the bar anymore.
Okay. Well, hey, Star, if somebody's looking to find you to do some of the home bar training and things like that, how do they look you up?
You can find me, let's see, on Facebook. Okay. As Star Bar.
Star Bar, right on.
And Star H. And that's probably the best way to get a hold of me.
Okay, very cool. And what I'll do is I'll get with you after the show. I'll shoot you a note and then maybe shoot me that information again. I'll put it on our Facebook page so people can just simply connect with you that way. How's that?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Star, thanks so much for taking time. I really appreciate it today. Enjoy yourself over there in Tampa and St. Petersburg, more accurately.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, and do me a favor, send our best to Mark. Tell him that we all hope he's feeling better.
I will. I'll send him a glass of tea from you.
Thanks so much. All right, everybody. Thanks, Star. I appreciate it. Everybody, Star Hodgson there from the U.S. Bartenders Guild New Orleans chapter and all kinds of other things. We appreciate her taking some time. Hey, a little Tutti Ma is a big fine thing. A little more Danny Barker for you. Come on back here to the Nola Drink Show.
Tutti Ma, shake that thing.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Gentlemen, they sang this song. The name of this one is Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. One star lived the life of a millionaire. Spending my money like a fool, did not care. Sure, and a lot of people a jolly good time. Buying bootleg whiskey. Champagne wine. Now you can see I fell down so low. Haven't got a penny, no place to go. If I ever get my hands on a dollar.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Yeah, spinning a little bit more Danny Barker there for you. His Reed solo guitar Reed on Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. Danny Barker, of course, really a lot of people associate him with playing the banjo. But he was also a fine guitar player, wonderful singer, and all that stuff. So, hey, some great music there for you. Some of my favorite tunes anyway. So, folks, thanks for tuning in here to the show. This is Brian Diaz. I'm your host. Happy to be here with you at the unofficial start of the weekend here in New Orleans. Happy holidays, everyone. I hope your Thanksgiving was great, as I said earlier, and looking forward to a wonderful December and new year. So there's a little segment that we want to do called Suds and Such, and this one we talk about beer. That makes sense, doesn't it? And nothing really important, not interviewing anybody today in the world of beer. We'll get around to that one of these days here pretty quick. But something that's been kind of striking me lately, and this has obviously gone on forever. Okay, so this is nothing new here. No trailblazing, no breaking news, nothing like that. But a lot of the ad campaigns from some of the larger beer houses always continue to kind of, mystify me, or I'm just underwhelmed, let's put it that way. So one of the ones that's a trend that's been going on for a number of years that we see, and so often with these, with the large beer companies, they need to keep their name out there. They spend, in many cases, spend more on their advertising than they do on the production of their product. That's true. That's not urban myth. And they need to keep their names out there. But lots of times, if you've basically been making the same beers the same ways forever, what's the story? What do you do? So I think lots of times they're kind of stretched thin for content. And in this case, the thing about the old packaging coming back for a limited time only. That's the whole ad campaign. So the latest one is Miller High Life, and they're bringing their old bottles back for a short amount of time. And, you know, when you have all these commercials where it's sort of these CGI'd versions of the beer flowing and these sort of simulated bottle ejaculations or whatever you want to call it, that's all these commercials really are. And then the crux of the advertising campaign is we're bringing back the old packaging. Hey, that's cool. I will say this with Miller High Life, that they did bring back the old jingle. You know, if you've got the time, we've got the beer, Miller beer. At least there's that. That's somewhat redeeming. Another one, Dos Equis, friends, okay? You know, when they started that one, that advertising campaign, the most interesting man in the world, that was pretty funny. Now, that's gone on. I think that's almost 10 years old, 8, 9, 10 years old. The original actor, Jonathan Goldsmith, who is now 77 years old, was forcibly retired, as the story goes. I think there was even maybe a little bit of falling out over salary and things. And of course, the brand Dos Equis says that they want to make it more appealing to a younger generation of wine drinkers. So they brought in a new guy. His name is Austin LeGrand, who is 41. Now, when that campaign started out, I thought it was pretty cool. Like, you know, you have these lines, he lives vicariously through himself. In museums, he's allowed to touch the art. Bigfoot tries to get pictures of him. Things that I thought, you know, hey, that was pretty good. Then it ran its course, friends, in my view. And, you know, there was that famous thing, you know, where stay thirsty, my friends. There were some funny stories, some funny euphemisms and other things that would actually go on in these commercials. And then, you know, they retired the guy. Now, when they retired the guy, they sent him off on a one-way trip to Mars. I think it's just pretty much time for it to be over. Okay, it's really gotten kind of boring. The joke's kind of old. They brought in this new guy, which is fine, but nothing's really changed. It's just a new guy. These puns are getting a little bit old. These little shifts in stories, there's really not much to it. It's all kind of the same. The one thing that they've done differently this particular time, however, is that the major seismic change in the ad campaign, aside from the new guy, is instead of saying, stay thirsty, my friends, he says, stay thirsty, mis amigos. So that's really pushing the bounds, friends, of our understanding here in gringo land in the United States of Spanish. It's a real stretch. It's sort of like Taco Bell with the live mas. So mas, we all know that means more, but we can't really say the live part in Spanish because then nobody will know what we're talking about. So, you know, that's the significant change. So we see these commercials where the guy's actually in the steppes of Africa kicking a makeshift football, American football, through a set of uprights formed by two giraffes. It's really getting thin, friends. I think, you know, when we start to see these ad campaigns go on for a number of years, and I know it's wildly successful or was, but maybe it's just kind of time to retire it. So my view of this would be that, you know, the most interesting man in the world has largely turned into the most uninteresting beer advertising campaign that there is. So maybe give it a rest. And actually, one thing that I'll leave you with here, before we start talking about bubbly and some other things, is some of the response to the change in the Dos Equis campaign on Facebook was not particularly favorable. And one person said on their Facebook page, loyal to the original actor, Jonathan Goldsmith, said, the most interesting man in the world doesn't get replaced by the beer company. He replaces the beer company. I like that idea. Folks, coming back to the Nola Drink Show, we're going to talk champagne here with Michael Nisley. Come on back.
Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is Brian Diaz, happy to be here with you. Second hour here of the show. Thanks for staying tuned, folks. If you're listening here on the radio, we appreciate it. If you are listening to the podcast, hey, I appreciate that too. So yeah, check us out there too. If you ever want to catch the show on the run, the podcast is always available the next day after the Thursday broadcast, right about midday, which is usually as quickly as I can possibly get my act together to get the podcast online. iTunes, Google Play Music, and TuneIn Radio. So as promised, folks, got a great guest here in the second hour, and we are going to bubble things up. As I said earlier on our Facebook page, Dr. Michael Nisley is here.
Great. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Michael, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it. And well, we mentioned we're going to get into champagne because that's what this is, a show about drinking. So, but I did mention that you're a doctor. This is not a medical show. I think there's actually a medical show that comes on after us. So if you want to stick around.
I'm happy to do this one today.
Okay, great. We're going to stick to champagne. But we mentioned in town you are an ER doctor for the Ochsner Hospital Group.
I am indeed.
Yep. Okay.
That's the day job.
That's the day job, and then we'll get into the moonlight here in just a minute. Where are you from, Michael, originally?
I actually grew up about an hour north of St. Louis.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And then came down here after 12 or 13 years in Chicago.
Okay, great. Any particular reason that, just did you find fascination with the city or something? Or?
Multifactorial. It was, in part, it was time for a change. I had been interested in New Orleans ever since I was a child. We ended up through here on vacation a lot when I was growing up, and wanted to pursue things with wine, and this seemed to be a good place to be able to do that.
So, okay, great. Now, have you always had a passion for wine, and how did this then come about?
I started to dabble with it in college, okay. And then when I lived in Chicago, thanks to a great wine bar up there and some of the people who worked there, that's where I really started to dive more deeply into it and think about getting involved in it beyond just hobby.
Now, you've taken on champagne as a true passion, and I'm assuming that, I mean, I know that you like other wines as well, but was this sort of a journey then? Did you start with still wines and then move your way into the world of champagne? Is that?
I did. It was a bit of a happy fluke. A friend back in Chicago loved the champagne bar, Pops for Champagne, up there, and she took me in there for the first time, and there were a lot of reasons that it really just drew me in, and sort of took that and run with it.
And you've taken that and run with it exceptionally well, and you've started Bubbliotech here in New Orleans. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Bubbliotech is a labor of love here. It's sort of a movable champagne educational and tasting experience. It's, you know, Bubbliotech, of course, the little play on words there with Bibliotech. I want learning to be an overt part of what I do.
Which is, of course, library in French, right? Bibliothèque. Yes. Let people know that one, right?
Yes. And because I feel like champagne and sparkling wine in general can be a very misunderstood wine category sometimes. And once you start to understand it, that's when things start to click. And that's what happened with me. It also rhymes with discotheque. We like to have fun with it too. So it's a lot of different things.
So, and that's great. Now, what we'll do too, Michael, before the end of the show, so we can remind people, leave it fresh in their memories before we leave. You got some events coming up, and including this evening, that we want to talk about. So we'll circle back to that. So it is, you're kind of but in a general sense, so you're doing pop-ups at restaurants, right? So it's champagnes paired with meals.
So we've done that before where we've done specific pairings. We do a monthly, essentially a pop-up wine bar where it's like any other wine bar. It's all a la carte. You can get a glass, you can get a flight, a bottle, and chef makes a different set of dishes each month to go with it. We do entire dinners with full champagne pairings for each course. So it's a lot of different.
And do you do that? That's at Boucherie. Do you do that there with them exclusively at this point?
At this point, yes. Okay. Yeah. But open to doing it with anybody else who wants to work on something like that.
Okay. So everybody out there, if you're interested in doing a pop-up champagne thing with Bibliotech and Michael, look them up. They're on Facebook. And you also do tastings, correct, at Swirl, the wine shop there in Mid-City.
I do. We've been doing for coming up on 2 years now, actually, tasting series. Some of them are one-off special topic nights. And we've also done sort of overview series of classes, five in a row over the course of 5 months, where we'll have a theme to really dive deep into sort of the nitty-gritty of champagne, the region, and production. And they've gone over really well. We get a lot of repeat customers there, and we work really hard to get different wines in front of people every single time so that it's fresh for everybody and they can keep learning.
That's great. Now, and as I know you know, and a lot of our listeners probably know, that can actually, in this state, can be a challenge because we're working with distributors, so it's sort of you can't just get anything willy-nilly. Have you seen, by virtue of your efforts and I think the growing, we were talking about it, Michael, actually at the top of the show, the consistent growth over the past 4 years of consumption of sparkling wine in this country. Are we starting to see a greater diversity of labels available in general and in New Orleans?
Absolutely. Even in just the couple of years that I've been really engaged in this here, there's been a really, really noticeable change. And I would say that pace is only picking up. I've seen it happen just with what I see going on in the market. I'm also engaged in things to push that forward and get more wine here. That's sort of my mantra right now is more and better wine.
Good.
And we've seen the market grow and change, and it's very exciting. And I end every class with reminding people that the way to get better wine here is to buy the wine and show the importers and distributors that the market's here for it. And the more that happens, the more access we get.
That's very true. Those are fantastic words, because I think that we can sometimes be, I know I am sometimes a little frustrated here in Louisiana with what is available. And certainly things that people want to sell here. It's not that they don't want to sell. Certainly we have cases where small houses, they don't have the level of production to export, for example, or even sell out of California in these situations. A lot of people, this is a great wine market and a lot of people want to be in it. It is really up to sometimes us as the consumer at the end here, or those of us who work in the industry that are not the distributors, to educate our distributors.
Yep. And I'm trying to educate at all different levels. And I've certainly seen that if you get the wine in front of people and help them understand the story behind it, the market's there.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned when, you had a sort of, you clicked with champagne. Did this come from enjoying stuff primarily here? Was there a trip maybe perhaps to France involved in this that was that aha kind of moment? Or was it more of just sort of a journey all the way?
A summer abroad in college was the aha moment with wine,
okay,
not with champagne in particular.
And where were you?
In Nice.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
Yeah. And as I mentioned earlier, the Pops for Champagne in Chicago, they, back in the day, would do on the weekends, they had these tastings that were very geared towards education so that you could come in and, in large part how I have set up my classes here, you could come in and each week would be a different topic or producer or theme, and you could really dive in and learn that way. And a tasting group developed around those that started, went off on its own outside of the bar. That is still ongoing. In fact, I'll be up there next weekend and getting the old crew together to
getting the band back together,
open some bottles.
Hey, so that sounds like fun. Well, let's do this, Michael, if you don't mind. We're going to take a quick break here. And you mentioned something that I want to kind of key in on when we come back, that I think for a lot of people, the understanding of the category of wine that is champagne can be, I don't think you said this word, I'll use the word mysterious, maybe I think confusing is what you said. And let's talk a little bit about how it's made. Let's talk about the region and let's kind of just do a little bit of a 101 for people and come back and we'll kind of work our way from there. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
All right, folks, come on back here to the NOLA Drink Show, WGSO 990 AM, New Orleans, the Meters.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on a Thursday afternoon, and we are talking champagne with Michael Nisley. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Flip your schedule around a little bit, and we'll talk about why, because you have an event going on later on this evening that we're going to make sure that you get to on time. But, you know, before we took the break, then we kind of touched on the idea of let's unpack some of this here in the world of champagne, and we talked a little bit about how it's maybe a confusing thing for people, a bit of mystery at times. When we talk about champagne, I actually clarify this at the beginning of the show. We are talking about these days very specifically. This is wine, sparkling wine that has to come from the region of Champagne. The term gets thrown around a lot, which I think is not a horrible thing. Our Champenois friends, those that are making champagne, don't like it.
Well,
understandably,
with good reason.
Yes.
And that is where I start, actually, is making sure that people understand that when we're drinking champagne, and if I'm saying champagne, I specifically mean the sparkling wine that comes from the Champagne region. There's plenty of other great sparkling wine out there. Some of it has specific site names, some of it doesn't. But each of those deserves its own identity the same way champagne does.
Right. That's a great way to put it. Now, let's stick to the champagne theme then here. So we've clarified all that. There is a lot of mystery and perhaps even some debate about the origins of the beverage. I think that we have a sort of mythological character in Dom Perignon that seems to be like, you know, the dude created the whole thing, and that's probably not the case, right?
He didn't create it. He made some refinements to the method, which were important. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's some of the best things about wine are the stories behind it. So I think the thing where I start in helping people understand champagne is, as we just said, that it is sparkling wine from the Champagne region. But what most people don't understand is that part of the complexity comes from two main things. It's a blend of white and black grapes, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Meunier, all vinified as white wine, and a blend of multiple years. And between those two main things, from a relatively small region and essentially three grapes that are allowed, you get a huge array of what's possible to be done with that because of the method.
Right. So now just jumping really quickly back to the history then. So this is a region and I did mention this before, but this is a region that's north as far as most wine production goes in France. It's about 75 miles, right, northeast of Paris.
Correct.
And so what we're talking about is generally a cooler area. So those three grapes and people are going to associate those grapes, I think, with, say, still wines in a very different way than how they're grown and when they're harvested and what that resulting base wine is than still wines, right?
Absolutely. And you see that anytime you have champagne. because it is a cooler climate, you don't have as much ripeness and you maintain a lot more acidity, and that comes through in the final product. It's part of what makes champagne such a food-friendly wine and a versatile wine at the table. And it also allows us to age champagne, in some cases, a very long time. And champagne wouldn't be champagne were it not, what we know as champagne these days, were it not for that climate.
Right. And we'll get into that. I think, and I did mention, which I didn't do, that we, you know, jumping back a little bit to the history. So really, and I could be mistaken about this, when we deal with the sort of great wine regions, if you will, of France, that's almost the last one to the table in a sense because of when sparkling wine champagne came to be there. And then really even some of the necessary techniques, refinements, as you say, with Dom Perignon and others that have come about much more recently to really kind of elevate, basically actually make it effectively, correct?
Correct. It did sort of start as an accident because of that cool climate. The wines, because of the cool climate, the wines wouldn't finish fermentation before they were bottled. There was still yeast and sugar in there, and they'd get bottled. And back in the day, before there were refinements in glassmaking in the late 1800s, those bottles would explode when it would warm up in the spring, and they would complete fermentation, and it would build up the CO2, and the glass wasn't strong enough to contain that. And the refinements were made in terms of the glass, in terms of even the winemaking processes, fermenting to dry to begin with, and then in a controlled manner, adding in the yeast and sugar that gives us that second in-bottle fermentation that is an essential part of making champagne that gives us the bubbles.
There is a potentially, I think there's a little bit of debate about this, and I think it depends on which side of the English Channel or La Mancha, whichever term you want to use, about the role that the English may have played with the glass.
You'll see it referred to as English glass. and most of what you'll read is that those advances in glassmaking at that time really did come out of England.
So, and as the story goes, and I think this is where there is some debate about this perhaps, but that, you know, these wines were very popular, becoming very popular in Europe. So these wines that were not finished fermenting that you were just describing were actually shipped over, still yet to complete fermentation, end up in the UK, get bottled there where they had made stronger glass and the bottles didn't blow up.
Yeah.
And that seems to kind of be the true story, right? And I know.
Yes. Yeah. The region itself was actually known for its still wines from back in Roman times.
Right.
It wasn't until later that the sparkling wine started to be latched onto as, oh, hey, this is something special. Let's take this and run with it.
Thank you. Very good. And I just want to throw that out there. I know I mentioned before my ex-wife is from France, so I always need to kind of bait a little bit. I apologize. But so let's talk a little bit about the grapes then. You mentioned that three grapes are allowed. We'll start in the vineyard here with all this.
Sure.
So three grapes are allowed. We have Chardonnay, we have Pinot Noir, which is, of course, Chardonnay, white grape, Pinot Noir, red grape, and Pinot Meunier. Meunier, we see very little of that in New World and other sparkling wines. Integral component, though, in France.
Absolutely. A third of the region is planted in Meunier. It's generally used as a blending grape. The bulk of champagne that's produced is a blend of multiple grapes. You do have your Blanc de Blanc that's all Chardonnay, or your Blanc de Noir that's either of the Pinots or both. But for the most part, the Meunier really only goes into the blend. And so you don't see it solo.
Solo, right.
But it's there and it's absolutely essential.
And if you can actually find, which I greatly enjoy both, you occasionally find some New World. I think Chandon, Domaine Chandon does a still wine of Pinot Meunier out of California. It's a very interesting grape to taste on its own when you get the chance.
I actually love it. It's not everybody's favorite, but it's just such a fresh, approachable, delicious grape. And there are some producers in Oregon that are working with Meunier a little bit as well. Irie, in particular, comes to mind.
Okay. Yeah. Great. So when we go from the vineyard, then Michael, so we have these grapes, and we won't go too far down into the terroir rabbit hole here, but we are dealing with largely chalky soil, right? A very thick layer of chalk.
Right. So there's chalk underlying the entire region, and where you get into the differences is what the topsoil is. In the Côte de Blanc, where most of the Chardonnay is grown, the chalk is very, very shallow, very little topsoil, and Chardonnay does much better in that climate, or with that soil. when you get up onto the Montagne de Reims, which is mainly planted in Pinot, you've got more clay over the top of it, and Pinot thrives better in that than it would down in the Côte de Blanc.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very unique, and I think this may be the best way to put it. We could do a whole show just talking about the terroir of Champagne and the variation and why those three are planted where
several
they are.
Several shows, probably.
Several shows, probably, right? Which we will spare all of you out there that level. Go read about it online, or we'll have you back on, Michael, and we'll start pick these things off a little further. But, you know, we then take these grapes, and it's, let's see, where are we at time-wise? Okay, we're good. So we take these grapes, and when we bring them into the cellar, so we're going to pick these, let me back up a little bit. We pick them, not what people maybe expect. We're going to pick them a little less ripe than we're going to do with still wines, but we're looking for a good acid level, right?
Right. And low acid isn't usually the problem. It stays cool enough, and they can control when they harvest that they're never in danger of losing that. It's keeping it on as long as you can to get as much ripeness as you can before you have to harvest. They're all harvested by hand and pressed as soon as possible. And the reason that we have white wine from Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier is that it's pressed such that the juice sees zero skin contact. It's pressed and immediately runs off into the tank. And that's why we get white wine from the black grape.
Right. Now let's hold that thought, because I want to come back to the pressing methodology and skin contact and parts, of course, tannin and color from red grapes, and we're avoiding that with Champagne, and we're getting a lot of the free run juice and things like that. So we're going to talk a little bit more production about how Champagne's here, made with Michael Knisley of Bubbliotech, and then we're going to taste a little bit. Normally, folks, what we do is we actually pour during the commercial break, but I think we need to hear the sound of the bottle opening on the air. Are you cool with that?
I think that's great.
All right, folks, come on back. We'll be right back with some Champagne.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey. The way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM. New Orleans, little Louis Armstrong for you folks. We're chatting with Michael Nisley from Bubbliotech. We are talking about champagne, having a fascinating conversation with the champagne that Michael brought, which we'll get into here in a moment or so. But we were talking a little bit before we went to the break then about, we kind of brought it in from the vineyard into the cellar, and we were talking about the press and how that's important. So we're getting a lot of no skin contact, so we're ending up with essentially a white wine, right? Even with our two red varietals involved of the three. And we're really trying to get that light whole cluster stuff, correct, typically?
Correct.
And then, so meaning folks, what that means is that we're taking the whole cluster of grapes and then we're doing a light press on this so we get the most desirable, less, I don't want to use the word tainted because that's not right, but we're less influence from the skins.
Yes.
In particulate and other things.
Correct.
Okay.
And they will continue to press it. And of course, every ounce of the juice ends up getting used for different things, but only the initial gentle presses are what go into the best champagnes.
Now, what do we do from there? What happens in the next
phase?
Well,
what we do from there is we make wine, mm-hmm. Which sounds simple, but the best champagnes are from the people who take the greatest care at, starting in the vineyard, but then also in making the still wine or the base wine that goes into it. And that will age for a period of time, and then we blend. We blend not only the different grapes, but as I mentioned before, we blend extra years into it as well, what's referred to as the reserve wines. And that's also part of why we get so much complexity out of this. So a lot of reasons why they use the reserve wine. One, it's to maintain a sort of house style from vintage to vintage, it being a difficult place to grow grapes. You aren't always assured that you're going to have a great year. And so you hold some wine back every year, even in the best years, even in the best vintages. By the regulations of the appellation, they have to hold back 15% of the juice as a reserve. And these are winemaking decisions. Each house will have a different approach to it, but they blend that freshest juice with some of the reserve wine and then put that into the bottle along with a mix of yeast and sugar.
Now, what we've done here is one fermentation.
Correct.
In the standard way. And I know that typically what we're talking about these days is that it's done in stainless steel, but we do have some exceptions to that, right? We have a few folks that do some fermentation in wood, in barrels.
Largely it's stainless, but it's not a small contingent of people using wood these days. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a moving target. There's some houses that are trying to use a little less wood. There are houses that are really trying to move over to all wood. So it just depends house to house. And that's one of the additional factors. Because of all of the different steps that go into champagne making, each producer has choices that they get to make along the way. And that's why from a small set of raw materials, so to speak, you get just astounding array of different styles of wine coming out of the Champagne region.
Right. Now, and I don't want to bog this down too much either with the using barrels. I don't want to imply, I think people might think, oh, they're like a red wine where it's going to sit in there for 18 months or 24 months. We're talking about just simply doing the first fermentation in wood, and people will debate this to a degree, but typically say when you're making a still wine, what that does is that just adds some mouthfeel and some creaminess to the wine, right?
It's the same in Champagne as well.
Okay.
And of course, there's the different sizes of barrels that they use. A lot of them will use large foudre, which are neutral as far as you're not going to perceive the oak from
it's
that.
Well, but used, right?
It lets it get a little oxygen and gives you that additional complexity and texture.
Okay. So now we've done that first fermentation primarily in stainless, but as we're talking about some using wood, and then we put it in, then go on. So then we put it in the bottle, but what happens
then? They do the blend. So okay. They look at that, the fresh juice that they have, and they decide which proportions of which grapes that from which vineyards or which villages that they think gives them the best blend for whatever style they're going for. They blend that together. It gets bottled.
And that's called assemblage, correct?
The assemblage is the blending.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it goes into the bottle with a mix of yeast and sugar, and then it is closed. So the first fermentation happens in essentially an open process, and that carbon dioxide that's made from fermentation is released into the atmosphere. When we put it into the bottle with more yeast and sugar at a very defined amount to give us the right amount of pressure in the bottle so we don't continue to have exploding bottles, it gets closed. Most of the time, that's actually a crown cap, like a beer bottle. It used to be cork across the board, but as industry advanced, it has moved primarily over to crown cap, and you'll see cork with some special cuvées. And what we have then is a closed system. So the yeast eats the sugar that's in with that initial wine and raises the alcohol a little bit, but what it really does is puts a lot of carbon dioxide into solution in the bottle, and now we have sparkling wine.
So that gas dissolves into the liquid, and then we get our bubbles.
Correct.
Okay. Now, let's do this. Let's take a brief pause, Michael, if you don't mind, because all of this talk about this is starting to make me thirsty, and I'm looking at this wonderful bottle. So can we get you to pop the bottle that we have, and I'll continue to talk while you demonstrate proper technique or something like that. It's a very fascinating thing, folks, and Michael's opening the bottle here for us. And we'll get into, after we wrap up this little topic here about how it's made, what he actually brought, a very special champagne and a very interesting approach to what's going on. There is a huge amount of variation and a huge amount of style in what we're talking about here. So that sort of house blend and so on and so forth is something that is very particular to each house. And this is a very unique one. So we're going to get the pop. We're working on it. There it is. All right. This is officially a show about champagne. Well, great. And so, and Michael's going to go ahead and pour, so I'll continue to talk. So it is a very interesting world, a very large world out there. And the house style that we talk about is something that's very unique to certain places. And then now what we're going to talk about after we finish up the production bit here, is we're going to talk about this particular sparkling, this particular champagne that Michael brought, about how some of this kind of maybe a newer approach of not necessarily being beholden to the house style being so incredibly consistent vintage after vintage. It's an interesting conversation. We'll get to that. So, Michael, when we do that, if you're able to talk and pour at the same time, which I appreciate, we then move into that phase where we're getting the secondary fermentation going on in the bottle.
Correct. And that happens over a fairly short period of time relative to how long the wine is going to be in the bottle. For a non-vintage champagne, meaning a champagne that's a blend of multiple years, that's going to be in the bottle like that for 15 months.
Okay.
When that is doing that, the wine is sitting on those now dead yeast cells, which are breaking down and interacting with the molecules in the wine itself to give us more complex flavors. And in fact, a lot of that sort of toasty, biscuity sort of flavor that you get when you open up a classic champagne comes from that contact with the lees or the dead yeast.
The dead yeast material. And that's such, I always like to say that here on the show, that lees is such a nicer word for dead yeast material. than saying dead yeast material. So
correct.
It's the French are good at that. So if you ever see something that's talking about, like, say, a still wine that says Sir Lee's, see some of that in, on Chardonnays and things like that, that means that basically it's seen some aging on the lees. Now, something very interesting that needs to then happen to make all this work is we have to do some pretty labor-intensive stuff with the bottles then from that point, correct?
We do indeed. So when they're in the cellar aging like that, they're on their side, and those lees have collected on the side of the bottle. When it's time to get them out, they go through a process called riddling, where the bottle is eventually turned upside down, and the lees are collected in the neck of the bottle, just underneath the cap. We have to get those out, though, because nobody wants to drink cloudy champagne. So the next step then is disgorgement. It can be done by hand, but more common, which was the traditional way, more commonly these days, it's done by machine. And what happens is the neck of the bottle gets frozen so that that little pellet of yeast is frozen and comes out in its entirety. And simultaneously, the cap or the cork is taken off and the bottle is set upright. The pressure forces that yeast out, so now we have clear wine. But we also lost a little bit of wine, so we need to top off the bottle, and that's important. But then the final step in making the wine itself happens then, and that's called the dosage. So they can top it off just with the base wine, which is fermented to dryness, and that is a bone dry style of champagne, a Brut Nature or a Brut Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Most wine that's sold these days is called Brut, which is a dry style. People always say, oh, I don't want the sweet champagne. There's actually very little relatively sweet champagne made and out there. So you usually are not in danger of running into that unless you're seeking it.
That's
out.
For the Osties of the world over yes. in Italy.
Yes. So what they do then is they'll open up several bottles and they put different levels of a wine and sugar mixture into each one, and they'll taste them and they'll decide which one is the most balanced and shows the style that they want it to. And once they determine that, all of the bottles get that, and cork goes in, label goes on, sits in the cellar for 3 more months, and then makes it to us.
And there we go. That's a nice summary. This thank you for pouring the champagne. Thank you for multitasking there, Michael. I really appreciate it. You're an emergency room doctor.
I'm an ER doc. I can multitask.
Right. You guys, what we're going to do here, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to distribute some of these glasses because I'm kind of the only guy over here with one. Not feeling too bad for everybody else in the studio. But we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about what we're drinking and a little bit more about what Michael's up to these days with Bubbliotech. Come on back.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking, next door at the W Hotel.
Sitting home alone,
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you, and I am joined by Michael Nisley, and we are talking about Champagne and Bibliotech, his new venture. New, couple years you've been doing Bibliotech, is that right?
Coming up on two.
Coming up on two, so it's not new. It's in its adolescence.
The idea has been there for a while. The name, about 2 years ago.
Okay, got it. Cool. Well, we pretty much covered, I think, our bases. And like we were talking about during the break here, Michael, we could have gone down any number of roads to dissect these steps of the process, choices made in the vineyard all the way through production, aging, all of that stuff. We'll save that for future shows. We covered here is the 101 of how champagne is basically made. You have poured for us a very interesting champagne, though. So let's, without going too far down the rabbit hole, let's talk a little bit about these guys.
Sure. So this is the Jacquesson Cuvée 738. And Jacquesson is a very old house in the region, historic house. They were responsible for many things. One of the more interesting ones is the Muselier, the little wire cage that holds the cork in. It was one of the Jacquesson family who invented that back in the day.
Oh, really?
So,
oh, wow.
A okay. Little trivia there. Currently owned by the Chiquet family. And I like to use this bottle, A, because it's delicious, and B, because explaining it is sort of explains a lot of the champagne making. So all of the things that we talked about already, it allows me to explain, you know, the different grapes that are in it and the reserve wines and whatnot. They also have a back label that lists all of that information. It tells you what percentage of each grape is in there, what percentage of reserve wines, what the base wine is, and
which is a rare thing on French wines in general, typically, but especially champagne, where they're very forthcoming with the blend and everything else.
It's changing for the better.
Yes,
I've become a pro at finding all the different ways they hide information on the bottles or the labels. It can be quite tricky sometimes, but I can do it. Jacquesson was one of the first to really do that. It's important in champagne because most of it is what we refer to as non-vintage or a blend of multiple years. So you can't pick it up and immediately know what it is. You don't know when it was disgorged. You don't know when it was released into the market just by looking at the label. And without knowing that, you don't know what you're getting. You may get, there have been a couple occasions where we've gotten wine here for some of my tastings or events, and I've noticed right away the label is the old label, and it's been sitting somewhere for a while, and it's not what the current release is. And we've been lucky so far that it has always worked out that the extra little bottle age has been good for the wine.
That's good for the wine.
But unless you know that sort of thing, it puts you at a disadvantage as a consumer when you're there in the shop trying to pick out what you want. So having that information is something that I think is very important, and these guys support that. So it's a great bottle in that respect to sort of show people and help them familiarize themselves with that. And what they did as a house over a decade ago was they got away from maintaining a house style and moved towards a process where you know you're drinking Jacquesson when you drink it. There is still the house style there, but you do get vintage to vintage variation more than you do from a big house like a Veuve Clicquot, for example, where year after year after year, it's maintained basically the same flavor profile and everything.
And as we've talked about, that process of reusing the reserve wine to kind of even things out as needed year to year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so they still use that to maintain as much of a house style as they have at Jacquesson, but you do get that vintage variation. And they still have some wines that they make that are single vineyard wines, which you'll, if you start looking into this or learning about it, the grower champagnes that are really trying to get more towards the terroir aspects of the region. They still make some small production single vineyard bottles, but only when the vintage was good enough and they have enough of it to do on the side. But the priority for them is this 700 series cuvée that they make. And it was a bit of a change from the way of doing things for sort of a house style. And it's made better and better wines.
It's a beautiful sparkling, beautiful champagne, excuse me, by the way. So, you know, coming up here, Michael, I mentioned like on the Facebook page talking about what we were going to discuss today on the show. And we were talking, you know, it's the holiday season and people generally tend to consume more bubbly this time of year than other times of year with, of course, Christmas, New Year's, all that other good stuff coming up. But if people want to get involved with Bubbliotech and what you do, which is this the great time of year to do it, because we want to know what we're out there buying for the holiday season and all that. Tell people how they can, you got something going on tonight. What do you have going on this
evening? So we've been doing a monthly pop-up champagne bar over in the old Boucherie space on Jeanette Street. Chef Nathaniel and James have been part of a tasting group that I started down here right after I moved here about 5 years ago. And we really sort of clicked over the wine and their food, and it's great working with them. So each month in the old space on Jeanette, we set it up as a wine bar, and we've got 12 champagnes on offer tonight. You can get it by the glass, do a flight, get a bottle. And Chef Nathaniel makes a different set of dishes each month that are great with the wine. That's the easiest way to come see what we do with Bubbliotech. You don't have to have reservations.
It's, okay.
You know, come when you want. We go from 6 to 11, so come when you want and stay as long as you want. And then I have my classes at Swirl. We're also doing a New Year's Eve dinner at a boucherie in that same space where we're going to do 8-plus courses, each paired with a different champagne. Did it last year, and people really responded well to it. So we're super excited. We're already working hard on the menu and the pairings. And you can stay tuned to their website and my website and Facebook for when tickets or reservations will be ready for that.
Okay, great. And that's Bubbliotech, Bubbliotheque, correct?
Correct.
Did I get that right?
That's it.
Okay, geez, thank God. And I'm not going to, what is it, the accent grave right there? Which one was that? There's the ague, the grave. It's the backwards one. It's the backwards one over the E. Not throwing that in there. We don't even know. Who cares?
It's the
grave. That's right. I think it is. So you can check you guys out on Facebook and on your website. If you're listening to the podcast right now, folks, which it would be Friday or thereafter the show, you will have not participated, obviously, or heard about tonight's event at Boucherie, but you do it once a month with those guys.
Yes.
And do you know the address on Jeanette Street?
Where it's 8115.
8115. And then Swirl, which is, of course, a nice wine shop there in Mid-City. What's their address?
It's Ponce de Leon and Esplanade. I don't remember the number.
Yeah, right, there you go. Just go. It's right by Cafe Degas and all that kind of stuff. You'd be kind of fine, yep, right, if you know that over there. So go check that stuff out. Check out the New Year's dinner that Michael's doing. Michael, it's been a pleasure and a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Folks, that is Michael Nisley from Bubbliotech, and we were talking champagne tasting, a lovely champagne. Check out their stuff. Check out Boucherie, all that good stuff, Swirl, and all the activities they have going on here for the holiday season. Folks, thanks for tuning in today here on the Nola Drinks Show. I will be back next week. I forget who's coming on next week. Probably half of it. I don't even have organized yet, but we'll figure all that out. And hope you can tune in. Happy holidays, everybody. And I will talk to you next time. And until then, cheers, y'all.